Welcome, everyone. It is May 13th, and this is the roundtable conference call on nutrition counseling. And I think we have about 11 or 12 people so far, and more tuning in. Welcome, everyone. This call is being recorded for those who can't make it. I'll review the way we do this. Many of you may have been on this call before. This is really an informal gathering, not a structured webinar or anything like that. The overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting and how we work with our clients to help them make healthy changes. The kinds of things that it's fun when you share are how you're using any of the counseling tips of mine that you've been reading. It's always great when people share exciting, fun things that are happening, or any specific observations that you've made about what happens when you use motivational interviewing skills. You can also share resources and training opportunities. You can ask your colleagues for input or suggestions. And as you begin talking, do give your name geographically where you are and, if it's appropriate, the population that you work with. I'm hearing a little bit of background noise here and there, so do mute your phone if you know you have background noise in your office. If your phone doesn't have a mute button, you can do 4-star, and that will mute you. You can do 4-star again, and that brings you back on. So, looks like we have about 15 people on the call right now. Who would like to jump in? Everybody's being quiet today. I'll make a few suggestions if you don't have any. For those of you who have been reading my tips, I assume most of you have. The last few tips might have sparked some thoughts on your part or questions or puzzles or something. But on denial, what happens when our clients seem to deny there's any kind of problem. The tip before that was about interrupting or not our clients. The one before that was on curiosity and how to use our curiosity most effectively in the service of our clients. And the tip before that was called who's in charge. In other words, what part of us is sort of running us during a session. Does that spark any questions or concerns or thoughts on anybody's part? Or does anybody have any challenges they want to bring up?
Hi, this is Jillian, Colorado.
Jillian, hi.
I'm noticing that when clients are coming in and trying to establish what their goals are, I'm having some difficulty where we'll talk around what their needs are, and I want to go deeper because I'm noticing that some of the goals of I want to feel good, lose some weight, they're nice goals, yet they don't necessarily help the person maintain the practices day to day to achieve that.
Yeah. So you're talking about particularly in a first session, maybe.
Yes.
Is that right? What to evoke to help fuel the process in a more long-term kind of way.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm curious what you do already, because my suspicion is you've figured out some things that help bring out their deeper goals. Then I may have some suggestions.
Well, I ask them what they'd like to learn from the session, what are their needs, how can I help them? And some people are very, very specific, and we can then go deeper. Other people, it's still vague, and so I'll ask them, well, what concerns you about that health condition, or mm-hmm. how are you currently managing diabetes? Some more probing questions.
Mm-hmm. It, yeah.
There still seems to be another layer that I'd like to tap into.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these do sound like particularly useful questions, and the what concerns you about your condition is indeed a sort of a classic MI question to bring out what's behind and what would motivate them to change, and hopefully what would motivate them in the long run. I could toss out a few other open-ended questions. Obviously, we're talking open-ended questions here.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, elaboration questions, basically. So if somebody says energy or lose weight or feel better, what the heck does that mean? Now, you wouldn't say, what the heck does that mean? You would say instead, energy, tell me more about that. How would that affect your day, your life? It's sort of the questions that are essentially saying, paint me a picture of what your life will be like when you've achieved your goals. You could literally say that, paint what your life will be like. That causes a person to notice what they really want that will pull them forward. Pull them forward, not what you think will pull them forward, but what would actually work. Jillian, what's your response to those ideas?
I feel a yes and. It's exciting
uh-huh.
because
okay.
the bird's eye view, and I also can hear some of my clients in my head saying these really lofty experiences and desires, and it's how do you build that bridge from here to there, and that's what the counseling is for.
Exactly.
It's like, how to then bring back from that loftiness of, okay, where can we start now?
Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-oh, somebody turned on the background music. I'm going to mute some people who I think might... what's your area code, Jillian? I don't want to cut you off.
719.
Okay. There, I got it. It's a 707 area code that somebody put us on mute or something. Okay, I see yours. You called in very first, as a matter of fact. Okay, so I'm sorry. You were saying you would bring out sort of the lofty stuff. Indeed. And bringing out the lofty stuff is valuable. This is part of what the MI research shows, that when you get people to talk up the bigger picture of their goals, that is indeed useful. And they do need to see the connection between those lofty goals and what they're going to do Tuesday morning.
And
that's where key questions come in. Jillian, how much MI training have you had, by the way?
It's been off and on. I've had some training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess this is where I see the initial open-ended evocation questions, really big ones, and then, narrowing it down a little bit, the big questions, and then, tell me what that would actually look like. What would that, how would that affect your day, or that kind of thing. And then doing a summary of what you've heard about what they want, with a key question at the end. And key questions are often action questions. They're, what do you see as your first step? What do you need from me to help you toward those goals, that kind of thing. I'm curious if that feels enough bridge-like to you. You said you wanted a bridge.
Yeah, I think that will definitely help to build more of a bridge and give me something to work with, and then, call back later for further.
Okay.
Clarification if needed.
Sure. And you might want to find my tip on key questions.
Yes.
You've already got some key questions in your head. It's tip number 120, which is in volume 3 in my practice workbook. And any tips I mentioned, by the way, to anybody here, if you don't happen to have that book and would like a copy of that particular tip, just email me and I'll send you a PDF of that chapter. So, I hear Jillian, this is a fascinating issue, this issue of how to evoke what will motivate the client and get down to brass tacks and get moving.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know, and the MI research shows, that if you try to get down to brass tacks in terms of actual planning too soon, before you've really evoked enough motivation, it's not going to work. And yet, if you just stay with the vague stuff, of course, that's not behavioral enough. And they won't know what they're even planning to do. So it is quite an art, isn't it? Yeah. Really good question, Jillian. Should we see who else has questions?
I will go next. My name is Lindsay. I'm in South Dakota.
Hello, Lindsay.
Hello. I'm walking outside, and it's very windy, so you can tell me if I need to hide behind a tree. But
okay, it's okay so far.
Okay, good. I am brand new and working at a Head Start program
mm-hmm.
with families, and I inherited a sort of unwritten policy where the dietitian collects all of the names of children who are overweight and calls their parents and tells them that they are overweight and that they need to come see me. And I've been informed that that practice didn't work very well, didn't build a lot of bridges with families,
uh-huh.
and hurt a lot
of
feelings.
Bridges. Yeah.
And I am trying to come up with an approach where I can meet the requirements of my program, which is to foster good health amongst the children I work with, but also bring up the topic in a way that will make the families less defensive. And so far, I've been trying to work more closely with the individual teachers and nurses that know the families better and sort of work alongside them. I'm still sort of figuring that out, but I was wondering if you or anyone had some suggestions on how they approach this topic with families who can be defensive about it when it's my job to bring it up.
Oh, really good questions today. Yeah, and this comes up often in the WIC program as well. Absolutely. I would love to open this up first to anyone else who has any input for Lindsay. Who has ideas for her? None? Okay, well, I'll say a few things and see what else, if it triggers anyone else. First, I really want to congratulate you for noticing and acknowledging that the way things have been done has ended up feeling confrontative and has caused parents to be defensive. Surprised. Good for you for noticing and being so respectful of the families. This is a little bit like any situation where a medical professional needs to bring up a topic that they pretty sure the patient doesn't want to talk about or will have some objections to or resist in some way, right? And so there are loads of times that happens. Generally, of course, some sort of engagement needs to happen first. And that's what apparently you've been trying to do, essentially by talking with the teachers and nurses, because these are people who actually work with the families probably all the time and really know them, so that there's already hopefully some positive connection there. And that's a great place to start. I guess that the sort of generic, if you will, an MI way of looking at it is first engagement. Just finding a way to engage with the families Now, I don't know if you get on the phone or whether you get to actually stop in and see them as they're dropping off the kid or picking them up or something like that. But, you know, some way of just literally, you know, saying hello and talking about their kids or, you know, something really general. And then when you feel like there's something finding a way, ask permission to speak with them about their child's health. You probably want to use a term like health or nutrition or, you know, something like that that sounds really generic. And if you have permission, then first start out with evoking from them what concerns, if any, they may have. You know, you never know. This is classic in the WIC program. You know, maybe parents will complain their kid's picky or, you know, won't even, whatever. You know, but you elicit from them what the parents' concerns are. And then, again, ask permission. This is the permission part. Ask permission to share information about the growth chart. Now, Lindsay, do you actually use growth charts? Do you plot them? Plot the kids?
We do. We do. We actually have a database that gives me the number percentile. And then I screen based on
height and for weight. Yeah. Right. Okay.
So, correct.
And do you have any sort of visual for that to share with the parents?
Our computer program is supposed to be able to print out a growth chart. It's not right now, I could just plot it on.
And some parents like growth charts. You can offer to show them their child's weight on a growth chart. Some people look at charts and their eyes glaze over. So, you know, you want to ask them what would be useful to them. It may be more useful to tell them in words that your child's weight right now is right in the range where only about one or two kids out of 100 are heavier than her, and 98% of them are lighter than her. Okay, that would be a fact, right? you want to present it as a fact, or visually, this chart shows normal kids your daughter's age, and the normal weight range that kids tend to, because some kids are bigger than others, of course, and your daughter's weight is about here. And then just simply ask for, what does that mean to you? What does that look like? Or something like that. And then offer, if there seems to be any concern, or even if what you get is defensiveness, like, oh, but I feed her really well, and she eats fruits and vegetables, and things like that, offer that you'd be glad to help her out and give her some tips or something if she'd be interested. Keep asking for permission, because that's
okay.
One of the things that's that helps with the defensiveness. by the way, Lindsay, have you read any of my stuff about resistance?
I have, but I need to revisit it.
Might be a good idea to revisit it. Okay. Rolling with resistance is, well, actually, tip number 103 is still on my website because it's not in a book yet. So you could find that there. The other, a new way of looking at resistance. Oh, that's 130. Yeah. That would be 130 and 103 are both about a resistance. They would both be helpful in terms of if you assume you're going to get resistance or you're beginning to, it makes sense to roll with it. Keep offering and asking permission. And as soon as you feel like you're arguing, apologize for it and back off and see if you can get back to the point where you're there to help them out at being parents, because being parents is tough.
Thank you so much.
I've been blathering on for a bit, Lindsay. How are you doing?
I started out, I just decided at first I was just going to call families and introduce myself because I'm new. So I figured that's not going to work next time because I won't be new. But
right. it's a beginning.
It's really helpful to think to remind myself of the concept of asking for permission, because I, the second I bring up the word wait, which I did once, I got immediate resistance without asking for permission first. So that's really helpful.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, so if you ask permission to speak about their child's health or eating habits or something a little more generic. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Good. I'm glad it gave you some ideas. Does anybody else think of any other input for Lindsay? Okay. Fortunately, we're not getting much in the way of background noise. Who would like to jump in with a concern or a question? Or a challenge or a offering of a resource?
Hi, Molly. This is Jenny. I'm calling from Atlanta.
Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a challenge.
Uh-huh.
I have some patients that I just find them to be really energy draining. Like, I feel like, not that I'm putting more energy into the appointment that they are, but they're just, they're kind of stuck, I guess, in terms of making progress. And when I meet with them each time, I'm just finding that I kind of, like, I'm dreading the appointment because I'm just frustrated with, I'm frustrated with their lack of progress.
Mm-hmm. So you're frustrated by their lack of progress. And I think, yeah, I heard you say that you aren't necessarily working harder than they are. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. First, I want to say I empathize with you. It can be very frustrating when somebody keeps coming back and they're not making any changes. I assume that's what you're talking about, right? They do return, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tip number 24 is sort of about that, actually. But you're primarily talking about the effect that it has on you, right? That you get exhausted and that you dread seeing them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Best to look at this. Now, these are people who are coming back, right?
Yes, and they come time and time again, and they buy packages, and I mean, they're great customers, but...
Oh, this is in a private practice.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, how about I toss out a few ideas? General feeling about this kind of situation is try some stuff. What the heck? You know, what have you got to lose?
Okay.
At this point. And it may be a little easier on you and a little more fun for you, if you will, if you just sort of try some stuff. I mean, there's everything from when they come in and say they haven't made any changes. You know, so sit back in your chair, put down your pen, do whatever you can to just really relax and simply, respectfully, I hope, reflect back what you're saying. Gosh, this is really interesting. You really care about your blood sugar or your health or whatever it is. I really get that from you. And yet something's been getting in the way of you making any changes that make much of a difference. Hmm. And then silence, right?
Okay.
Assuming the answers are in the client, essentially. Now, I hope that sounded respectful enough. It's sort of tricky to do that, but it's sort of stepping back and simply saying some things about what you see happening in as neutral a way as you can. That, gosh, this is interesting. I wonder if you and I can look at this together. That sort of curious attitude of, let's see, gosh. And then silence. How are you with silence, Jenny?
I'm okay.
Okay. Good. I know some people have trouble with letting there be a little silence.
How long is too long?
Good question. That's an excellent question. I think probably a lot of it depends on that. If you look at the client's face, by the way, that's a phenomenal idea for a tip. because you probably know that when you look at somebody's face and they're looking up at the ceiling and they're looking all around and all over the place, as if they're really thinking, let them keep thinking.
Okay.
Sort of, if they're staring at you and sort of looking at you funny, you know, well, then maybe it's that they didn't get understand what you said, right? You can probably, you can tell by looking at them which type of, you know, silence it is. And if, even if they sort of seem like they're thinking, but then they still don't seem to say anything, I suppose you could say, gosh, I'm sorry, I may have stumped you. What are your thoughts, if any, about all that? To sort of prompt them to come up with something. Figuring out as many ways you can to sort of gently put it back on them, and maybe even, I'm thinking out loud here, I'm not sure about this, maybe doing a little bit of, pointing out to them that you've been working really hard. I wonder how that would go, sort of something like, gosh, it's given you all sorts of ideas, and you've experimented with some of them. I feel like I'm getting at the end of my ideas, so I'm wondering how we can look at this together, sort of, from 30,000 feet. If we look at your life and how it's going and these changes we've been talking about, See what I'm saying, Jenny? Sort of.
Yeah.
Back them again. Yeah. And even maybe pointing at, if you are out of ideas, hey, why not admit it? Again, what do you got to lose, right?
Right.
You know? Now, it also depends on the pattern. If you notice the pattern of you coming up with all sorts of ideas, I call it pulling rabbits out of the hat, and they try all of them and say they don't work, or they don't try most of them, you could reflect that, gosh, I've been, all my grad school and everything, I've been giving you all the information I've got, and it sounds like it's not about information with you. It's more about what happens in the middle of your week, or whatever it is you seem to be seeing, Jenny. Pick up something that you seem to see of the process that seems to be happening or not happening, to get the client to think in terms of process. Now, again, I've been blathering on for a while. Is there any use to this, Jenny?
Yeah, I think it's really helpful. I think maybe just stepping back, and instead of, continuing to set goals with them and modify goals and, maybe just taking it from another direction and asking them to reflect on what, they think might be going on.
Might be happening now, right? With the goals they've set so far, what happened, right?
Really, yeah.
Slowing down the process, because people can go, well, I'm fine during the week, and then it's the weekend, or, whatever. And then you can ask permission or ask direction. You might also want to, I wrote a tip a long time ago, I think it's in volume one, on asking your client for direction is tip number four. Oh, no, that's disappointment, excuse me. No, that's four. asking your client for direction. You might want to take a look at that tip, too, because it encourages you to sort of step back and then ask them what – because most people in their minds, they sort of know where the catch is, you know, where the stuck places are. And if you ask them what it is, as opposed to expecting you to come up with it, it's going to be easier on you, too. Okay.
Okay.
Is this enough for now, Jenny?
Yeah, but it gives me a few good ideas of things that I can do. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Okay. So, who else has a concern or a question or a resource to suggest? These have been great questions. We could end the call early, but I doubt you guys really want that. I will spend a moment talking about something that came up in the last counseling intensive I did just last weekend, the two-day training program on motivational interviewing. I was in Minneapolis, and we did something that I've just started doing in that workshop called basically complexing your reflections, making them more complex. And for those of you who may feel like you're at a point where you'd like to something to sort of challenge you to bump things up a little bit, the power of reflecting, I can't remember where. I think I wrote a tip on this, making reflections more complex. Because there are simple reflections where we simply essentially repeat what the person said, but in just ever so slightly different words or something like that. And when instead we take something that we said and we go out on a limb and really reword it, either with a really reframed way of looking at it or some way where it's really making it very different, it can be very powerful. And when I did this exercise with people, they were really able to see how their reflection felt like it reflected them better. How about, would anybody be willing to volunteer to demonstrate that with me? All you have to be willing to say is to sort of just be yourself and say, one thing I like about myself is that I'm, and say one word, one characteristic that you have. And you and I could play this little game to practice. I would be practicing making my reflections more complex. Anybody willing to play with me?
I'll play Molly. This is Jenny again.
Okay. Hi, Jenny. Okay.
Hi.
So Jenny's going to come up with an adjective, and I'll respond to it with a somewhat complex reflection, and then she'll respond to that, and we'll sort of keep going, because you can do a bunch of different complex reflections. So Jenny, say something that you like about yourself, a characteristic that you like.
One thing I like about myself is that I'm creative.
Creative. Now, that's a simple reflection, right? So, Jenny, you're someone who loves creating new things.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. And you're someone who... I'll go out on a limb. You're someone who is artistic.
Not really.
Okay. Thank you for that feedback. See, if I go out on a limb and I'm absolutely wrong, you'll correct me. And that's normal. Yep, absolutely. And our clients will correct us if we're wrong. So you're someone who's creative about the things that you do, all the things you do in your life, work and everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. See if you can respond to, with a few more words than just yes, so I have something to go on.
Yes, I like to create projects and design materials, like promotional materials for my business.
Oh, so you love being creative at work, and you're someone who's generative. You generate ideas.
Yes, I generate ideas, and projects.
And projects, things to do. You like being creative. Let me get rid of that word creative and figure out a different word. You get a kick out of coming up with new things to do in your work.
Yes. And I like doing that because it keeps me busy and it gives me a variety of activities to work on.
You're someone who likes a diversity of activities throughout your day.
Yes, absolutely. I like every day to be different too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're someone who would be bored with a routine type of job.
Yes, I like keeping different hours on different days and having flexibility in my schedule,
mm-hmm.
and being able to create my own schedule.
Mm-hmm. You like responding to what's out there in really flexible and new ways.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't go too far out on the limb that time. Okay. Now notice that as we do this, I'm pretty much sticking to what she said. We're filling it out. We're like filling in the holes. I mean, creative is, you know, is a great word, but it could have gone in an artistic direction. I didn't know, right? And we're sort of fine-tuning it a little bit more. And notice that when you're working with a client, if you do that, if you do more complex reflections and go out on limbs like that, it helps the client get more clear about what really matters to them, for example. If you're doing that during the time when, you know, when you're first getting to know them and figuring out what their concerns and motivations are, you and them, more importantly them, really, they're getting a clearer, deeper picture of what's mm-hmm. important, what motivates them. And that gets back to Jillian and your point about how to go deeper. Jillian, are you still on the call?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm curious, this little exercise on making more complex reflections, whether that hit home for you at all.
It did. I got to see how things were opening up mm-hmm. in a exploratory fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And it also made me wonder a little bit on, and I realized we're talking more about counseling, what about more on the business side when it's not a counseling and you're trying to maybe provide some direction in the management for another employee, how that could be beneficial too.
Oh, yeah. You mean where you're the supervisor?
Mm-hmm.
And helping them be better, basically, at what they're doing?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Oh,
yes.
Absolutely. Mm. Cool idea. Uh-huh. And particularly, were you particularly thinking of that with these reflections?
I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about how you see using that.
Well, right now, I'm in a space where I do part counseling and I also supervise other dietitians. And I was listening to I forgot the the name of the video is basically about having uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. And I was noticing the style and how different it is from motivational interviewing because it's a lot more directive. And I felt like it was also more boxing people in. Like, I noticed your behavior X, Y, Z. And while it helps to create a framework and to have a conversation, to me it didn't feel comfortable because it felt more like I'd be placing my observations and feelings on top of the other person, which is very contrary to motivational interviewing. So hearing this exercise, I'm reconciling how do I bring elements of both sides, some of the firmness with the management approach and the openness and the collaborative approach of motivational interviewing to create my own style.
Right. Yeah, really, really good point. And that uncomfortable conversations, that essentially gets back to what Lindsay was talking about, too, that she's assuming these would be uncomfortable conversations for many parents, the one about their weight, the child's weight. And the way MI looks at that and the way an uncomfortable conversation, if you will, fits inside MI, is the key point is that the facts are stated really neutrally. You know, there's a difference between saying you're not following your diet, you know, or, you know, something that's very much a you statement as opposed to these lab values indicate blood sugar is running high enough that kidney damage is happening. That's a fact, right? So anytime it's stated as a simple fact that you present to the person, the metaphor I use is this: if you're putting it out on the table, you're not shoving it at them. You're putting it on the table and asking them to look at it and have a response. And you'd be very curious to hear what their response is, which is different than saying, you got to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And with supervising RDs, I'm curious, what kind of tough things are you needing to say to them?
Actually, one of the things that I was having a conversation was that we're currently doing your Steps to Excellence.
Uh-huh.
And I was noticing that one of the ladies was struggling with it. And I asked to sit with her when everybody else was out of the room and to check in to see, you know, what her experience was. And I learned a lot of stuff from that. And it also, I was feeling uncomfortable because for me, motivational interviewing has opened up so many windows and has brought some beautiful aha moments for me and clients that I would have never expected previously. So to talk with somebody else who is not having that experience, and I believe a lot of it has to do with feeling overwhelmed and also not really understanding the spirit of motivational interviewing. It's easier for me to have tough conversations with clients than necessarily somebody who I supervise.
Is it more like a little bit more like a colleague or something? Yeah. Well, and that's really interesting. And Jillian, congratulations for really being willing to just sort of, it sounds like you essentially set aside all the MI stuff and just wanted to listen to this person, listen to her and what her experience was. And indeed, that's very MI-like. and it's appropriate for you, if you're wanting to help them pick up MI skills, it's very appropriate for you to be modeling that with them. And that's an example of a way you did that. Congratulations. And again, there's the permission piece. Were you actually observing a session or just talking with her?
With her, what we've been doing is people have been listening to the podcast, and then over lunch we sit down and discuss what people have been experiencing and give some time for practice. And I was noticing a trend over the last few sessions that was affecting the rest of the people in the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was in I was laughing to myself because part of me was observing this whole conversation, and I was like, oh, there's a reflection. Oh, this is going on. And I was trying to use as much of the skills as I could, and there was also a part of me that was also observing the I told you so or I'm the parent, so therefore, you know, that conversation that most of us have grown up with.
Oh, yeah. And I need to get into that.
Yeah, I didn't want to pull a boss card.
Right.
I want to have a collaborative, and that collaboration with supervisor, I'm still learning how to utilize the strengths of both aspects versus just saying it's going to be this way or the highway.
Yeah, yeah. And indeed, this is a tough situation. And it sounds like you have several of your staff there who are gung-ho, and it's, you know, going pretty well, and you have ideas. And then you have someone for whom it's such a shift. It's so different than the way she's used to being that it's a challenge. And so I have a few suggestions. One is to take a look. Do you have my practice workbooks?
Yes.
Yeah. Look at volume 3, tip number 73, and then inside tip number 73 is tip number 111, which is where I talked about feedback on the counseling process. And you aren't quite observing a session per se, but this is sort of like that. You're observing practice, I guess. And so it takes you through a bit of a format to use to give feedback to counselors. And a big part of it is asking permission first, asking permission to make some observations, for example. And actually, was there permission asked to go through the steps, the Counseling Excellence Program with all of them, or was it mandated?
It was asked.
Okay, so it was voluntary on their part.
I asked what they would want to focus on as a team for this year to help with their clinical expertise, and they came up with that request.
Okay, and this one you're talking about was on board as well?
She was slightly on board, not totally.
Okay. You might want to review some of the stuff about rolling with resistance. And it might, I mean, you can do it individually when you're talking with her, but also possibly a teeny bit when you're there all together. Rolling with, I'm hearing this feels odd to you, or I'm hearing you're not sure this makes sense, or, you know, just a little bit of reflecting what you're hearing from her to roll with it. It gives you a good chance to practice rolling with resistance and demonstrating it, right? And no question there are some people for whom the spirit and even some of the skills of MI are a real challenge. They just don't fit very well. And this is a topic that's talked about on the MI Trainers listserv sometimes. You know, how do you, if you're hiring people, how do you screen out for someone who is just going to have a lot of trouble getting it, for example? So I'm not sure where we're at here. Has this been enough to work with?
Yes.
More you need. Okay. So thinking of it from the point of view of carefully giving feedback, using the MI skills when you do, asking a whole lot of permission. You'll see in that format for giving feedback that the first thing you do is ask the person what's going well. And even if you have to if they say everything's going horribly, you know, be sure to get them to say something that went well so that you can agree and reinforce that before offering a suggestion about something they might want to tweak. Okay. Good question. Who else has this brought up any other questions with anyone or concerns or challenges? Okay. If there's nothing else, I guess we can wind up. And I'll be, as I said, I'll be posting this recording probably not for the next few days. I've got busy stuff coming up. And then I'll schedule another call probably 3 or 4 months off, and you're all welcome to tune in. And maybe I'll see some of you at my counseling intensive someday if I haven't already. Check out my website for where I'm going to be. Okay. Take care, everyone.
Molly? Oh,
yes?
Molly?
Sure.
Hi, this is Marjorie. This is the first time I've been on one of these calls. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, wonderful. And I missed your New York one, unfortunately, when you were in New York in January.
Right.
So I won't be able to make another live session, but I've done some motivational within other conferences, but not an intensive. So wondered, since I'm not going to be in an area where you're going to be soon, I know you have resources on your website, but where would you suggest that I start?
The place to start would be the Steps to Counseling Excellence program, which Jillian was talking about, because that's online program that is, it's fairly low tech. It's podcasts, audio podcasts, and a bunch of PDFs, so things to read and to listen to. It's 10 or 11, I think, units, and it's expected that you would take them slowly, one at a time. Sounds like Jillian and her group, one at a time, and then practicing is a great way to do it. If you have someone to practice with, a colleague or something, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas in the podcasts about how to practice. The podcast, the Steps to Counseling Excellence program, is the online program for the counseling intensive. So if you go ahead and do that, if you eventually sign up for an in-person workshop someday, you get a big discount because you've already paid for part of it, and you will have gotten.
Okay. Yeah, I did notice that. Yes, when I was hoping to get there in January, I didn't realize that was the one though. Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other? Is that answer your questions or more?
It does. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, today is the registration deadline for the Philadelphia one, and in the next month or two, I'll be scheduling all the ones for 2017, so stay posted. I doubt
I will.
Work in 2017, though, because in New York, I do about every 2 years. But, okay, good. Thanks for chiming in, Marjorie. Any other questions? Okie dokie. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.